The film is about life. It's about the complexity of life. It's about a boy becoming a man. It's about a man confronting himself. It's about the death of the Reagan era. Yeah, it's about a whole lot of things. But part of what's essential for me is it's not about any one thing. It's about a broad spectrum of the human experience. And it can't just be reduced to a single explanation. And that's what I'm most proud of, is that you can continually get lost in it and try to navigate your way through the story again and again and again, and hopefully see something new every single time. I think we confront the apocalypse every day. We can fix things in cinema that we can't fix in real life.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent, here with Kevin, Kat, and Dave. Hello.
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 Hi.
Follow us on Instagram at Speak All Evil Pod. Kevin, you, I understand you went to the movies last week.
I did, yes.
And you saw the highest opening weekend for any Neon Films distributed movie of all time.
It's their greatest
opening weekend of all time.
Neon opening of all time.
Yep.
Yeah, I was one of two people in the theater contributing to that.
Wow, that's a big opening.
Well, it was also during like Snowpocalypse, so like basically Maine turned into like Krampus.
Yeah, you went
over the
weekend in the middle of the storm. I remember you texted me.
Yeah, I was worried about you, Trent. I invited you to a movie.
Yeah,
just you know, trying to open that door up.
Appreciate it.
And I was worried you had some driving to do. Immaculate. I have to be careful when I go see movies in the theater and by myself, I've realized, because I can be really harsh. And you guys are always in my head. So I'm so excited. Like, the movie was starting. It looks awesome. And I was like, can't wait to tell these guys this is going to be the best horror movie of 2024. I'm so pumped. It is not. But I am going to level set. It's good. It's well done. Sydney Sweeney does a fantastic job when she's asked to. Mm-hmm. It's just a really difficult genre. You know, right up against like The Omen, the new Omen coming out. We're not that far removed from The Nun 2. And this is like a well-trodden area. You know, a convent, a baby. We've done it all. And it does offer a nice original twist to what's really going on at this place. And it is gory, but like all the media hype and stuff saying it's, oh my God, it's so scary. All the scares are in the trailer. And basically, if like the clap scene in The Conjuring got you, this movie's going to get you like three times with like some variation of that scare. But, you know, it's good. It's not as bad as other things I've seen this year.
I went to the movies too, and I saw IFC's biggest opening weekend movie of all time.
Wow.
Late Night with the Devil.
Mm.
It was very good and enjoyable. Did not wow me. Mm. I thought it was really creative, very original. Love the premise. You know, it's a late night talk show, and this is the found footage of their last episode. And they nailed the 70s. You know, it's a lot of work went into the authentic 70s vibe. Definitely extremely well done. Very good. I mean, it wasn't a little much on the hype, I think, for me going in. And I knew it was not going to match the hype. It's been getting insane hype. But it was good.
It sounds like the same thing happened to
same
both
deal.
Of you guys.
Yeah, they're good. They're totally good. And you know what? Go buy a ticket, like support horror. I think we always say that. But you wouldn't miss anything by waiting for streaming on.
For Late Night with the Devil, I think it's a perfect streamer.
Yeah.
I mean, it is really, there's nothing big screen about it at all. I mean, it's a TV show. It's found footage of a TV show. I think it actually would play better at home, maybe later night, almost like you're watching a possessed Jimmy Fallon or whatever.
Nice. I know nothing about it, which I enjoy. I think they just released another trailer, or maybe it's like the second. It revealed a little bit more, but I like how little I know about it, and I want to keep it that way.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Dave, I understand you've been going through some of the past film work of J-Lo.
Well, yeah, it's the new work of J-Lo.
Oh, it's a new one.
Yeah.
Not I Am Me or This Is
Well,
Mine.
Yeah, that's, there was like I Am Me Back Then or something was the name of her first thing, and now she's coming back. This Is Me Now.
Oh, right.
And it's just entirely green-screened, big budget, like, music video story about her love affair, all her past failed love affairs and her love affair with Ben Affleck. And it's really funny because they originally split up because he didn't want their relationship to be in the public eye. And right. This goes completely over her head that she's making this giant thing about it, and he stars in it, and it's pretty horrifying.
It sounds scary.
It's like watching aging happen. It's like the failure of, like, I don't know, something is very sad about it. But I also watched Point of Interest, which you recommended.
Point of Interest.
Jonathan Glazer.
Oh, Zone of Interest.
Zone of Interest.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yes.
What'd you think?
I thought it was great. I like his stuff. And actually, one of his first movies is one of my favorite movies, Sexy Beast.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Came out the same year as Donnie Darko.
Okay,
and
yeah.
It also has a psychedelic bunny in it.
Oh.
So I always thought, like, you know, that movie was kind of akin to this, at least at that time in my life. But that's pretty much what I watched this week. The J-Lo thing took a while because I kept falling asleep and then waking up. And
still watching it? You're like, let me keep doing this?
Yeah, go back. I would rewind it past the point that I had to just to watch it again.
Great. I watched our boy, Jacob, here in the new iteration of Roadhouse.
Yeah.
And I will say that it was awful, except for Jake Gyllenhaal without a shirt on. So that was nice for me. And that's, what's his name? Colin McGregor? What's his name? The boxer? UFC guy?
Connor.
Awful.
Connor.
That's what, okay, I was close. Awful. Just a real piece of shit on and off screen. Not good. But yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, it's no Swayze. Sam Elliott. Post Malone was in it for like 2 seconds, and that was also not good. But again, 10 out of 10, Jake Gyllenhaal's abs.
Post Malone was in the J-Lo one.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he fighting people in that too?
He was a guest, a feature.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, there we go.
I also went down Kevin's late 90s, early aughts rabbit hole. I watched a bunch that's probably more appropriate to talk about when we
save it.
Get into it.
I have a laundry list. I've seen a lot of overlapping, but yeah.
I've seen a lot this week.
You seem to have like a rebirth this week.
Yeah,
renaissance.
I'm down with this era. It's Kevin's turn of the millennium week.
Oh, good title.
Thank you. Two films from the late 90s, early aughts. I'm going to start with the 2001's Donnie Darko.
During the presidential election of 1988, a teenager named Donnie Darko sleepwalks out of his house one night and sees a giant demonic-looking rabbit named Frank, who tells him the world will end in 28 days. He returns home the next morning to find that a jet engine has crashed through his bedroom. As he tries to figure out why he survived and tries to deal with people in his town, Frank continues to turn up in Donnie's mind, causing him to commit acts of vandalism and worse.
2001. I have never seen this since it came out. This was probably a video port, like a rental, solid physical. I had to go to the store and like grab this one, and it was all the rage. This was super late 90s, early aughts, like indie darling. But I was curious. I remember being scared of Frank the Bunny and having like definitely some feelings of unease and remembering some violence and all of that. But I don't remember if I understood the movie or not. So I went on Tubi and I watched the director's cut thinking that I was smart and I would start with, okay, well, you got to watch the director's cut. It's going to have like so much more explanation and all of that. Then Trent and I went out to lunch and he was like, no, you got to go with the theatrical cut. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to go home and watch the theatrical cut. This is a rare instance where I would say the quote unquote director's cut, which that is even debatable calling it that. It actually makes it kind of worse.
Oh God!
It sort of like tries to it tries to explain it without really explaining it. Add some weird exposition and like book page reading that I don't think is all that necessary. That.
Yeah. I try to do the extra mile 1 week.
I know. Yeah,
and I get fucked.
This is a very podcast moment. Sorry, Kevin. It's this one cat. Theatrical cut, bro.
Okay, can you guys text me next time? You're like, hey, save yourself the extra however many minutes.
You wouldn't have had time. This was real late in the game. I barely squeezed it in. But the theatrical cut leaves it a lot more ambiguous. However, being older now and watching it, you know, 20-something years after it came out, I think I get it. I think I know what's going on. I think I'm ready to debate that.
All right, let's see. I have no idea.
I'm really surprised that Richard Kelly didn't have much more of a filmography. So I went, okay, I'm going to check out the dude that did Donnie Darko. Obviously must have gone on to like massive success. Not a lot.
Southland Tales was the end of it, man.
And The Box with Cameron Diaz and I think James Marsden maybe. But this is another one of those indie flicks where like Jake Gyllenhaal's first, you know, big role. His sister Maggie Gyllenhaal. You got Drew Barrymore popping up. I mean, everybody.
Swayze.
There's a million people in this movie. It's insane. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm glad. It was a great piece of advice. I think if you're going to watch this, go with the theatrical cut. Leave it ambiguous, and it lets you do a lot of like sort of searching and coming up with your own answers. Yeah. The director's cut actually just makes this one more confusing. And then as far as, you know, evil and fitting in with the podcast, yeah, I think this one nails it. I mean, it's like from the rabbit all the way to the really violent ending. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, I love this movie when I first saw it. I don't know, it's a little dumb for me now when I watch it, but it reminds me of like that era where, at least like with like music and stuff and culture, there was this like, I got a fucked up childhood, man. Like those kind of dudes, you know, and this was kind of like, it kind of like eased us into something a little harsher. Yeah, I love this. I love how it's like got all these deep dimensional things and like the whole thing versus like are do we have morals if fate is in charge? And I love the Christian guilt, and I love the infomercials. Yeah, I really love the editing of the infomercials. And I'm sorry that I spread a rumor that Beth Grant had died. She's still alive.
Me. Yeah, you scared me.
I could watch an entire movie of just her being appalled at teenagers maybe picketing outside heavy metal concerts and saying that, you know, people are satanic. I got to meet Frank a few months ago at a premiere, the one that I met Bill Moseley at. And we didn't really exchange too many words, and I didn't dare to get a picture. This is a good, you know, mid-aughts movie. I don't love it anymore, but it has a special place in my heart.
I love this movie, and I didn't remember anything. I remembered very little at all about this. I saw it one time. I was hesitant about this because I saw it one time when it hit DVD, remember liking it, or I remember it was weird, and I just remembered Frank the Rabbit, and probably even only that because it's such an iconic image. You see it all the time. So that's all I thought, and I was thinking, this is going to be dumb, or this is going to be one of those movies from the late 90s, early aughts that blew my mind, and I'm going to watch, you know.
That was my experience.
Yeah, and I'm going to watch it now and be like, this is goofy shit. Totally, I had the opposite experience. I love this movie. I'm all about, if there's a Donnie Darko fan base out there, which I believe there is, I'm a member. I love this movie, love the theatrical cut. I never watched the extended because I was totally satisfied. I don't need to know anymore. I think I get it, you know, the basic idea. I totally forgot the cast. I mean, you mentioned a few, but it's just stacked from top to bottom. You got Noah Wyle showing up. Noah Wyle. I don't know how you say it. The ER guy.
Oh, ER guy. Yes.
That's exactly who I know best. I have no idea what his name is. Just see him and go, ER guy.
Yeah. This is like Napoleon Dynamite on a bad trip. Yeah. By the end of this movie, I was waiting for songs from Napoleon Dynamite to come in. When's the prom? I was like, oh, where's Pedro? I kept forgetting it was 2001. While I was watching it, it's so good. The 80s vibe is so authentic that I kept thinking, oh, yeah, you know, in the 80s, they made these. I kept thinking of it as an 80s movie. I have to keep reminding myself, no, he's doing the 80s. I also watched the documentary on Tubi There's a making of on Tubi. It's awesome. It's pretty in-depth. Talks to both Kelly, the director and his and writer and his producer that he came up working with, Jamie, I forget his name. Talks to lots of people involved, and it goes really in-depth. And the whole story of how this got made is amazing. It's almost like unlikely. All these events kept falling into place. Drew Barrymore, I didn't realize she was a producer. Her production company was huge in getting this off the ground. This is a first-time filmmaker, writer. Really great doc, just as far as like indie filmmaking and something that was successful against all odds. Man, love this movie. This is a really good watch. If you're wondering if Donnie Darko holds up now, I say, hell yeah, holds up. On Tubi, definitely check it out.
So I hated this movie when I was a teen.
Really? Yes. Hated it?
I did. What? I feel like it was because I was like a weird goth kid in high school, so I was surrounded by weird goth kids-ish, I guess. Goth-ish kids. And they're always like, oh my God, Donnie Darko, it's the greatest film ever. I love that guy. My life is like that. And I'm like, that's incorrect.
Hey!
Whoa,
hey!
Whoa.
It's my take, guys. It's not your take.
Hey.
Whoa. That was a Rottweiler versus, what is Calvin?
He's a Pomeranian mix.
Yeah, he is.
Like a miniature, extra small.
He's from the streets, though. And he yes. will he will always stick up for himself. You really don't have to worry about him. Sorry about that.
It's fine.
That's crazy.
He is unfazed.
You got to make some like, money somehow around here.
Yeah.
Dog fights. Right, sorry, Kat, you were saying.
Anyway, upon... sorry. But upon my most recent rewatch, which would be this one, I haven't seen it since I was a teen and didn't really care for it. I thought it was, I didn't love it, but I thought it was more interesting than I did before. I did watch the director's cut because I was trying to be, like I said, I was like, look at me, I got this, guys. I'll spend almost two and a half hours on this.
We talked about Aliens. Yes. We were talking about scenes from the extended cut. And you were like, oh, wait, what are you talking about?
I'm like, fuck. Yeah. So this time I saw director's cut. And I'm like, I got this, guys.
Hey, same.
Little did I know.
Podcasting.
I'm the worst one. I could appreciate it more now. I think from like an older outsider's perspective, perhaps. I wasn't just hearing the hype of like a bunch of teenagers around me. There wasn't really any gore, but it was full of death, which I think puts it in the evil category for sure. It had some science fiction. It had mental illness. So it had some things going for it. Obviously, it was jam-packed of movie stars now. I guess back then, the movie star would be Swayze. Gyllenhaal was fresh. We got my girl. Don't remember her name that you were talking about.
His sister?
Mary.
Beth Grant.
Beth Grant.
Seth Grant. Right.
Oh, Seth Rogen was in it. Yes. He was the worst.
I like your boobs.
The singer from Phantom Planet. I was just privy to that tonight.
There we go. Have we ever talked about Swayze on this show? Is he in any horror movies?
I don't think we've ever talked about
I don't think he's
Swayze.
In a horror movie. The best part of this movie is obviously, though, the moody 80s soundtrack.
Oh,
10 out of
so
10.
Good. So good.
Other than that, I thought the acting was very good. The plot was definitely interesting. I still don't really understand what was going on, but that's okay. But there was like time travel or like future seeing, and then they were talking about God and stuff. So there's some theological things going on. And also, who doesn't love a good old-fashioned death by plane engine or 80s muscle car?
Kind of Final Destination moments in this.
Exactly. Yes. So it's like going to happen either way, yada, yada, yada. See, I don't really remember the difference between the theatrical version / the director's cut because I had seen the theatrical so long ago. But I thought the ending was way better than what I had remembered. And I even cried a little bit.
Oh,
I
wow.
shed a tear.
I think it's very emotional.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you told everyone that you didn't not to watch the director's cut, but you didn't see it.
I didn't tell anyone not to.
The ending
to. I
doesn't
just said,
really change.
Oh, I thought you told him not to.
Well, I said that I watched the theatrical and that I had read some reviews comparing, and that people were saying yes,
she loved it.
Well, I loved it. I shed a tear. Tears for fears. Am I right? Ha 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 ha. I didn't love it as much as I wanted to. Thinking like revisiting this film, I was like, all right, it's happening now. I'm an adult, 32 years old, throwing goth cat, teen cat in the wind, and I'm doing this. But you know, again, liked it better
still kind of just like, what's going on?
I think it was made for the age that I was when I watched it. I think that's kind of the point you're making, Dave. Like, it might not age as well, but it's interesting. My daughter is 15, and the kids in her school, like, they're going as Frank the Rabbit for Halloween and shit. Like, this movie has, like, a total...
Oh, that's
a lot
good
of,
idea.
Like, the late 90s, early aughts are, like, super...
Next year.
Yeah. Well, I think they're out there, man. I think like, mainstream enough that you can find one. But this movie definitely has, like a lot of 97-ish to, like, 2002 is, like, coming back full force. And Donnie... Like, one of my daughter's friends walked into our house on Halloween, and I was like, what the fuck? How do you know about that? And they proceeded to, like, rattle off, like, their theories on this movie. You know?
Really?
Like, yeah, huh. Not getting into this right now.
It's like, all right, and you can come on in from the other room. Tell us, what did you think?
You can never hang out with my kid again.
I think the thing that bothered me this time when I watched this movie was... I watched it right after we got done the pod last week, and I got real blazed. I sat down and watched it, and just Jake Gyllenhaal's acting in it bothered me a little bit.
At first, me too, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just so doughy-eyed, and he's just like, yep. I don't know.
Yeah, one of my first thoughts was, if he's going to walk like that and right. and have his head, like if he's going to slouch and walk like that the whole movie, this is going to be really annoying. But then as the movie went on, I forgot about it and I didn't care about that.
Well, he also gets like more confident. I don't know if it's confident is the word, but he gets more assertive as the movie goes on. And he has some of those like standing up to Swayze in the auditorium.
That's so great.
There's some really good scenes.
I
with
Googled Swayze horror movies. And there is another one.
What?
This one comes up, Donnie Darko and Ghost, of course.
Horror movie? Ghost!
Kat, if you pick Ghost, you're fucking
Why?
Tired.
Why? It's a ghost.
It's paranormal, bro. It's paranormal.
Ghostbusters ghost. And Ghost. It's
paranormal.
Next pick.
God.
Interview with the Vampire and Ghost.
I loved how it shows on the TV in the living room. They're watching the presidential debate between Mike Dukakis and George Bush. They're watching the real footage of the 88 presidential debate. And one of the first things that happens is that Mackie... Gyllenhaal says, I'm voting for Dukakis. That's like one of the first lines of dialogue. It has, oh man, this is taking me back. I remember all of this and again contributed to the authentic feel of this.
It's very disturbing how a lot of like what Beth Grant does, like you were saying, she'd be picketing outside of like a heavy metal. She would be on a school board right now banning books.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of upsetting how relevant
this
movie, some of those issues still are. And bringing in like, how fucking topical is it that like Swayze's character is this like hack life coach or like
so good.
Affirmation.
So good.
And then he gets busted for being a pedophile. I mean, there's a lot in this movie that I was just like, huh.
His
buddy Richard Kelly is a time traveler from like another universe or something. Cause like he knew some shit.
His self-help book is titled Attitudinal Belief. And you know, he's talking to the kids about conquering fear. And it's also very God, you know, very Christian-like, too. And
culty.
That opening with Head Over Heels by Tears for Fears is another thing that at first I was like...
Yeah, I thought you'd hate that.
I did!
But the first song is The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen.
Right, right, right.
In the theatrical cut. The director's cut, he replaces it with Never Tear Us Apart by NXS.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which
both
always
are
wanted
like
in there.
Super amazing.
Yeah, he always wanted NXS and they couldn't get it, so he used Killing Time by...
Killing Moon.
Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen. So that's great. But no, I was talking about the first scene at the high school.
Yeah, getting off
the
bus and like...
Tears for Fears song, Head Over Heels. Yeah, I was thinking initially at a certain point... I'm like, okay, this has already gone on for too long. What is this, a music video? I thought this was a movie. You're just playing a great song. But the longer it goes on, the more you realize this is a few shots. This is a long, steady cam. It's not one take, but it's amazing how it's done. And then I started appreciating that. And it kind of blew me away. And there were a bunch of things like that about the movie that took me a minute to kind of like get into this world. It's kind of a, it's a world building thing, and you have to sort of get in there. You know?
But the things like that, like the slow motion, I thought they went a little over the top with. And then also the fast motion, whenever they would show the kids like showing up to school or leaving school, it would be in like fast forward, like Benny Hill. And it would be like, can you guys just let it play?
No.
I thought this gave a great example of two very supportive parents to a mentally ill teenager.
Questionably.
Yeah.
Is he mentally ill?
I think a bit. I thought they said that he had paranoid schizophrenia. Isn't that another thing? But then she was like, I've been giving you placebos. And I'm like, then who is helping this boy?
Which that is a difference in the director's cut from the theatrical. In the theatrical, they do not outright tell you that he's taking placebo. They heavily imply, but it's one of the things that they leave up to your own interpretation. So it just furthers kind of your debate.
Well, I interpreted from it that they were placebos. Because they told me that they were placebos.
When you said that, I was like, wow, I missed a really important line somewhere.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, you did.
Thanks for outing me.
Movies.
Yeah. But yeah, like there's a, I don't know, maybe this was in the director's cut. I might just be, you know, talking to me and Kev here. But the mom is like with him on the bed and she's like comforting him. And he was just like, you know, what is it terrible having me as like a son? And she's like, no, it's great. And she's like crying and it was emotional. And then his dad's like, you're my only boy. Like, I don't know. It's just like very.
Okay, that's some nice. extended scenes.
That's some extended shit.
Yeah.
Well, watch the director's cut. I don't know.
Well, the director's cut also, Grandma Death is a character in this. So it's a 100-plus-year-old woman that is their neighbor. And she's always standing in the middle of the road looking for waiting for a letter in her mailbox and always constantly almost getting run over. So at some point, as he's seeing Frank and trying to figure out what's happening, and Frank tells him the world's going to end in 28 days, he goes to ER guy. One of his teachers and says, like, what do you know about time travel? He gives him a book that was written by Grandma Death. So in the director's cut, one of the things they do is they keep like cutting in scenes of him reading the book. And it's like this stylized, like, you know, shot of the page, like focusing on some text and stuff, which I thought was completely unnecessary, especially after I watched theatrical.
They show some clips of that in the doc.
Speaking of the book, the Evil Dead shout out on the marquee at the movie theater.
Well, they're watching it in the theater.
Yeah. They wanted to get Chud was Kelly's first choice, and they couldn't get Chud, and Sam Raimi volunteered them to
Evil Dead for free.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they get Chud?
Because no, it's not that they couldn't afford Chud. They couldn't figure out who had the rights to it.
Sounds more like
so they literally couldn't find who to ask. It's not that it was like Pony, hey, give me like $1 million. You can use 3 seconds of Chud.
That's perfect.
The lawyers for Chud were like, hard nosed.
They're actually Chuds.
Ayo.
Well, they talked about the soundtrack, which is, like you said, flawless. Every minute of the sound. I forgot about Mad World. Totally forgot that.
So that's where I was like a snooty, not a teenager, but definitely early 20s. I was so pissed at that cover because it was, you couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
You could not turn on any radio station. Yeah. I would even like resort to being like, I need to listen to the pop radio station right now because I need to get away from like all of this brooding music and this fucking Mad World cover. You turn on Top 40, there it is.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. One of the reasons they couldn't get the sparkle motion dance scene, which is like the girls' dance troupe in the theatrical cut, that's to Notorious by Duran Duran. And originally they wanted to, they actually shot that scene to West End Girls by Pet Shop Boys. That's what they shot the dance number to.
Oh.
But they were finding that, and this is, I'd never heard of this before, they were finding that some of the songs they had already procured had language in the contracts that no other song could get more money than this. That would be like part of the agreement. So then they ran up against West End Girls, and Pet Shop Boys wanted more than they had already paid other songs for that had that language in the deal. Mm. So they couldn't use that. And that's why it ended up being Notorious. And that's one of the things they switched back. That's the only thing I'd like to see from the director's cut is I would like to see that scene to Pet Shop Boys.
It was too Notorious, I thought.
It was still Notorious.
Yeah, because I was like, what the fuck? Why are they dancing to this song?
This movie kind of got 9/11'd This was released in October, and the advertising campaign, the trailer had a bunch of plane stuff in it.
Oh, no.
And also just kind of the whole mood of the country was not that with promoting entertainment like this. And,
I mean, it's bookended by a plane engine falling on a house.
Yeah. It didn't get picked up initially. It's an interesting story, too, how they went and premiered at Sundance Film Festival, and they had it was a big buzz movie. Oh, my God. Richard Kelly tells the greatest firsthand story that, and his producer both, that they premiered at Sundance. It was a buzz movie. There was a lot of expectation around it. And that Harvey Weinstein showed up at the premiere, and he was wearing a Donnie Darko crew hat, and nobody knew where he got it. And he, like, scared off a bunch of people from, you know, other distributors. And then the movie played. It was a longer cut. And everybody hated it, or it wasn't well received at all. And so nobody picked it up, and they left Sundance without a deal. And Kelly was talking about how damaging that is if you're a buzz movie and you premiere somewhere and nobody picks you up, you're like, every day that goes by, you're damaged goods. So it never really got a big release. But they said that to this day, they have no idea. Nobody knows how Harvey Weinstein got this Donnie Darko hat and showed up acting like he was dialing this movie in.
What did that have to do with them not getting picked up? Did they
I think
like
he
him?
Wasn't.
He was creating it twofold. One, a lot of people probably thought that Weinstein was coming in with like $3 million bucks to like grab this thing.
Yeah.
And then two, they show a longer cut and people aren't did not that like enthused.
Like a bidding war or something with Harvey Weinstein.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So it didn't get a huge release at first. It made like back its money. It was a $4.5 million budget, made like seven back. And then it got released in England and it was a hit. And then it got re-released. That's when they did the director's cut, and that's kind of how it maintained its its cult relevance.
So, what do you guys actually think was going on?
You tell me. You tell me your.
I think that there are other universes. Keep in mind, I'm still watching Fringe, so I'm like real high on that tip. There's other universes. Frank is a time traveler from another universe telling Donnie Darko.
Okay.
Warning Donnie Darko that what he saw with the plane engine falling was the beginning of the end of the world. So that plane engine falling, I think the plane was also from another universe, which is why they couldn't find the plane. But the engine somehow snuck through, crashed on his house, which set into motion a series of events that would lead to the end of the world in 28 days.
Sparkle motion.
And as Donnie figures it out, he realizes, I need to wait for this 28 days from now. That's when this is supposed to happen. I have to die and I'll save the world.
Right.
Okay. Or it's an unreliable narrator and it's medication and it's hallucinations. And that way you can have any kind of mumbo jumbo put in there.
Exactly.
And it can raise questions that don't have to be answered.
Right. You don't even know if he's taking his right medications or not. He's obviously has some severe problems. I didn't really have a theory. I just thought my takeaway was that he sacrificed himself. However he did it, he decided to get killed by the thing and avert all these other things. That, I mean, I don't really need any more than that. It's just, it's such a mood piece, and it's, I think it's just more about the other stuff that's going on. But I got at least that much. He decided, however he did it, that he was going to fix this rip in time or whatever.
I think there was like, a dimension with him surviving the initial plane crash situation. Then there's like another dimension with the death lady somewhere. And then there's like the middle line of reality, of our reality. But I just wonder, if he sacrificed himself and like all of that stuff didn't happen after whatever, so like pedo Swayze's still out there being a pedo, you know what I mean? Like that's still happening.
Yes, right.
You know, so it's like there are some good things, I guess, that happened, like the end of the world didn't happen, but also like Patrick Swayze's just like.
Yeah, I thought of that too.
Diddling kids.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Right, but everyone that died doesn't die.
Okay, but. You know,
it's like Back to the Future meets the butterfly effect.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Because there is that, and there's that like weird ending scene where it kind of like shows you all the characters. Like, Swayze's just like sitting there on his bed crying. What's he crying about?
But probably that he's a secret pedophile.
Yeah. Ah, classic.
They all have like, I think it's that they all have like some residual feelings of the previous 28 days or heard. Something. Like okay. what could have happened or yeah. and what maybe could still happen. I don't know.
No.
All I know, the scene where he wakes up in his bed at the end of the movie, like Gyllenhaal's performance of just laughing right before he gets it is yeah. fucking awesome.
Yeah. yeah. Those inspirational or self-help videos, the mock videos that are in this that are Patrick Swayze's character, those were all shot at his ranch in California or whatever. And his wife was helping them and all everything, his whole wardrobe was all his own 80s stuff. He must have backed out for this. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like if we ever made a movie, the funnest part of making a movie would be to intentionally have a reason to shoot other fake things to put in your movie exactly. that other yes. people are watching. Like I would be yeah. cramming it. You guys would have to be like, dude, that's like the 17th scene where you want to like shoot a commercial just to have it in there. Yeah. That would be the funnest thing for me.
Yeah, Kelly said actually they shot that first. All of those little tapes were shot before the rest of the movie, and he said he got all that stuff together and edited it to show the crew before they even started principal, so that they would at least know, because this is such a bizarre thing that I could at least show them these, and everybody was like, okay, this is going to be good.
He rocked the skeleton bodysuit before Phoebe Bridgers. Mm. That's become very popular, the whole skeleton bodysuit.
This is a Halloween movie.
Yeah.
I forgot that element of it.
Yeah, when the end, when... So James Duvall is the actor that plays Frank in the bunny suit, but also yes. he is Frank, like a kid.
Right.
When at the end, when he pulls up in his like Camaro, whatever the car is, the dude that gets out in the clown suit, that's Fran Kranz, the comedy stoner guy from Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, I thought oh. he looked familiar.
Yeah, there's so okay. many people in that's this. Fun. Like, wow. it's crazy.
Okay, next up on Kevin's Turn of the Millennium Week, talking about 1998's Urban Legend.
A university is beset by a rash of gruesome murders that resemble old urban legends. When her friend is killed by someone hiding in her car, Natalie begins to notice the pattern. Her suspicions grow stronger when her own roommate is strangled to death. Soon, the quiet college campus is transformed into hunting grounds for a maniac, and Natalie struggles to find the killer and stop the bloodshed before she becomes the next victim.
Urban Legend rules.
Woo!
So this is an interesting one. Am I wrong that this never pops up on streaming?
Oh, I don't know.
It's something that like I feel like
this
I
VOD.
I would regularly watch this if it just came across like yeah. Any streaming platform.
I don't recall ever seeing it anywhere other than VOD.
Yeah, so yeah. I've been going down a rabbit hole of just trying to find, you know, something around this era that's not Scream, that's not I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
That's kind of a throwback, but not just, we've covered a lot. And I forgot all about this one.
Yeah.
Came across it on DVD and was like, holy shit. Another one, different from Donnie Darko, but same as in you recognize every single person that comes on screen. This is a direct response to Scream. A movie like this does not get made if Scream doesn't rake in hundreds of mil, you know, sure. just a couple of years before. And this one really lays it on thick. This is where you start seeing a lot of the horror legends get thrown into films. But as far as kills and the concept, I'm still confused as to how they fucked up Urban Legend and it didn't become like a Final Destination-esque franchise.
Yeah.
How it didn't just keep churning out sequels. This is a never-ending vat of possibility. And for me, I totally bought into all these urban legends when I was a kid. Like, I really thought, like, the guy in the back seat, you don't flash your headlights because that's a gang member that's going to turn around and kill you. Like, all of this shit that they were feeding, the kidney thing, I was 100% sure. convinced. People are yeah. getting their kidney. They're waking up in bathtubs full of ice. The world is insane.
Left and right. It's happening.
Yeah, now they just yell about the border or something. But all of these were very firmly planted in my mind by the urban legend. We need to get very spoilery. I'd love yeah, to see a first take, about, you yeah, know, yeah. initial thoughts, and then you got to dig into it because It hasn't been since 98 since I saw this, but it was a number of years after, and I had completely forgotten who the killer was. I was enjoying the hell out of it, and I'm still blown away by how well this like reveal comes out and how it lands, the twists, and just great kills. It's hard to fuck up kills. Like I said, like Final Destination had a great blueprint. Urban Legend had a great blueprint and stuck with it. So I really enjoy this one. I think it's on par with this era of, you know, sort of like CW kids thrown into a horror movie, and it works.
This movie was pure 90s trash, and I loved it. Right up my alley. Exactly what I want in a slasher movie. We had a fun cast of hot 90s people, a la Dawson's Creek, a la Jawbreaker, just all these beautiful people. Cinematography, beautiful. A billion crane shots, just always swooping, woo, 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 woo. Aesthetically pleasing and also dramatic, which I really appreciate. There were plenty of jump scares, you know, nothing too crazy, but like, oh, the coat, oh, like, open the closet. So that got me a few times. Snarky dialogue, like fucking 90s jokes, like sexism, you know, all that fun stuff. And most people, and you know, like most slashers, most of the cast dies, which I think, you know, we all expect. But as Kevin said, they all happen in very fun ways. Not one is similar. The story was fun. It had me predicting the killer at least 3 different times until I got it right, which was really, it's always funny to be like, oh, they're the killer. And then they're not. And you're like, oh, they're the killer. Oh, they're not. And like the person next to you is like, just stop. Nick's like, they're not. That's not who it is. I'm like, okay. But it had like all these other twists and like the interesting backstories that come out and like, oh, this is why it's happening. Oh, so all these like interpersonal connections with all the characters. All the urban legends that they reference and like the murder just reminded me of like this one like scary story, not like scary stories to tell in the dark, but just like a scary story book that I had. And I read them all and I was like, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen, like read. And then I would like tell them to like my mom. She's like, yeah, that story has been around since like 1960. I'm like, but it's real, mom. It's scary. So it was oddly nostalgic in that way for me. And then I remember like reading about all those. Best part, it takes place in Maine. Did we notice that?
Yes.
Did we see the Maine license plate?
Yes. With the wrong motto on it.
Well, I only saw the lobster. I didn't really.
I only saw the lobster too.
I just saw Maine.
Oh, yeah. Well, what did it say?
I don't remember, but we're watching it right now.
We'll
get there.
I just remember thinking, oh, Maine plate, that's not, it's more of like a New Hampshire motto on like a Maine plate.
They did say when I was like looking up, you know, the synopsis, it did say a New England town.
New England
so
College.
Maybe they were just trying to like do it like a amalgamation.
I think there were other license plates in it as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, either way, I thought that was cool. But yeah, I don't know, fun deaths, blood, suspense, hot babes, both male and female. You got Jared Leto before he became unbearably annoying. So that was really good. And yeah, so I think this might be my new fave.
Had you seen it before?
I had seen some of it before. I had seen the opening scene on cable and I was like, oh, I got to revisit that. And then you picked it. So it was perfect.
Banger. Love this movie. It's a banger week, Kevin. I got so into Urban Legend, I hardly had enough time for Donnie Darko. Donnie Darko was my dark horse pick. After I watched this, I was like, I love this movie. I don't know if I'd seen it before. If I had, I may have, but I totally forgot everything about it. This is kind of one of my favorite things about this. I love the premise. And I think they just ran out of urban legends because there's the urban legend kills that are in this, but then they reference tons of other. I love the script. I love the screenplay. I love the dialogue. I think this is a much funnier, much smarter movie than you would expect. So they're referencing other urban legends, you know, throughout the background dialogue in the movie, and I just would think maybe someday you would run out of them, but I liked how the whole idea of the movie is that everybody thinks the idea of an urban legend based serial killer is so stupid that it couldn't be real. Like, and Jared Leto, the reporter, you know, the student newspaper reporter, he even says at one point, he says, a serial killer killing based on urban legends? That's a stretch, you know. Yeah. And that's kind of like the whole thing is that nobody believes such a ridiculous idea, even though she's seen it. By the time she's seen it twice, I felt so bad. You go ahead and use one of my least favorite words, gaslighting, in this movie. This woman has been through seeing two of her friends murdered in front of her eyes and is convinced by everyone that it was just a prank. He always does that.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
He hangs himself in a tree?
Gets thrown through the hood of the windshield of his own car and lands in your lap? That was a prank? It's so stupid. I loved how callous and terrible everyone is. The whole movie, they're the meanest people. These are the worst kids ever. None of them care at all. People die. Nobody cares. We've talked about that before. This is one of the most flagrant examples of a movie where everybody keeps dying and nobody cares at all. It just has no effect on them. Rebecca Gayhart, a revelation. She's amazing in this. Really, really good. I didn't expect Robert Englund to show up, but that first scene where he's the professor and he's doing this seminar or class on urban legends, I was like, this is the dumbest college student who ever lived, Rebecca Gayhart's character. I just couldn't believe what I was being asked to believe, you know? But it all makes sense. It's so good. This sent me down same rabbit hole, a lot of rabbits this week. I watched Valentine, Jamie Blanks is the director.
And Valentine.
And Valentine, 2001. Loved Valentine. That one almost was more like a giallo slasher or a throwback slasher to me a little bit.
Do you know who was supposed to direct Valentine before Blanks came in?
I don't remember.
Richard Kelly of Donnie Darko.
Really? Oh, shit.
He left Valentine because he finally got the funding to make Donnie Darko and Blanks. Oh, they called. Okay. They were like, what does this movie seem like? Oh, urban legend. Call that guy.
Yeah. Well, so I watched Valentine and then I watched A Disturbing Behavior, which I didn't even remember that you mentioned last week, but I just saw people mention it in the same breath as urban legend. I watched Wild Things. I watched Sorority Row from 2009, which, a little later, but still.
So good.
This one was the best, though. Of all the extra late 90s millennial horror that I watched, I loved Urban Legend. Highly recommend this one if you haven't seen it.
This is a scene you've previously denounced, I feel like.
I know. And I'm in.
And here you are. You're in. That's great.
I'll say one more thing. Of course, I would like more gore and more boobs, but it wasn't that time. It just wasn't that time.
No boobs.
I did like this movie a lot. I think I saw it back in the day, or I just was in a bad mood or whatever, but I just kind of dismissed this along with some of the stuff. And I honestly think I just don't like Scream. And a lot of the other movies that respond off that scene or whatever, or that surge in horror, I do like some of them. So I did like this. To me, this was like watching an 80s slasher.
Yeah.
But it does have like the crazy cinematography and production value, and it has great acting.
Yes.
But I did think the physics of the very first kill. I mean, you're never going to get that giant axe over the headrest, and it's got a big long handle, and then the axe comes out the window.
Yeah.
And I watched it two or three times, and I was like, wait, that doesn't work. I mean, it's cool you're showing the end of the axe, but that's not how it would work. The axe would be in her body unless you just hit her with a handle.
Well, then later on it says she was decapitated, which...
So, why would the end of the axe come out the window?
It's not even possible.
It's science. You wouldn't get it.
They actually had to change cars because the first car they tried that in, they couldn't even swing the axe.
Yeah.
They couldn't even do it at all.
Yeah, so Dave, did science.
They had to get the right... The killer had to... pick the right car. Also, if we're going to talk about discrepancies here, I thought it was a disrespect to microphones everywhere.
Oh.
When Tara Reid was running through the radio station and every different part of the place she's being broadcast over the airwaves.
Perfectly. Yeah,
perfectly. They're listening to every word. She's like whispering in the corner, like, oh, he's coming. And
she had the headset on.
Trent was on IMDb, what microphones did they use?
Now, that's
this
an urban
movie.
Legend, right? The DJ that gets killed on the air.
Yeah.
That's an urban legend.
Yeah, and they talk about Love Roller Coaster or something, allegedly the scream in that.
Yes.
I guess people thought that was a real person.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I never heard that one.
I do think that it actually could have been. Like a little campier, even because of some of those discrepancies, it almost seems like they did they mean to do that, or but I think that they just kind of let it loose on some parts, like the horror parts, and then concentrated more, like you were saying, the dialogue was amazing. I liked seeing a younger Julian Richings.
Yes.
We've been talking about him.
A lot.
Yeah, I know. And I hadn't seen him. And this actually reminded me of when you watch the slashers, like, what was the one with, like, it has, like, Donald Pleasance in it and Jack Palance.
Alone
and,
in
like,
the Dark. The, yeah. Martin
they're,
Landau.
They're kind of from, like, the decade before.
Yeah.
Getting in these, like, horror movies after that, like, these slashers. So I like that part of it with Robert Englund making, you know, an appearance in this.
We have Brad Dourif in the cold open, which is right. Fantastic.
Oh, Blank
shot
open.
That cold open in its entirety to show it to investors to be like,
perfect.
Hey, check this out.
This
is, like,
what,
this
is
what I'm going to do.
So
and that's Brad
you.
Dourif. So the voice of Chucky.
So good.
Yep. You have Richings right. in this.
It got me. The cold open got me. That yeah. twist, just the twist in the cold open, I was like, yeah. oh my God.
You know how they yeah. could have fixed the axe thing is the hook guy. The hook guy wasn't in this. The hook for a hand.
Well, but yeah. I know what you did last summer was the year before.
Yeah.
Kat talked about the roommate getting killed, Danielle Harris, horror royalty. She's the goth roommate in this one.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
So young Danielle Harris in the Halloween movies, and then now in
Halloween,
tons of,
like, five or something.
Four and five.
Yeah. That goth roommate is great. I
yeah,
love that.
It's such a good
She
scene.
Was so mad.
Yeah.
Like, I'm
box.
Sorry, but if I was like, you gotta have a better roommate situation than, like, turn off the light and then you just lay there with headphones on while they have, like, weird goth set.
Oh, I didn't go to college, but did that shit, like, really happen? Was that really, like, a thing? Like, the sock on the... Speaking of urban legends, was it, like, a sock on the door?
Did you have
headphones? I mean, they weren't, like, real good earbuds back then.
I had
if
to sleep
we
in the
college,
common
have,
area a couple times.
We'd be on a better podcast.
I went to college.
You did.
And look at me now.
Clint, did you go to college?
I did. I did a couple unsuccessful semesters. Yeah, nice. I did. I did share a dorm with a friend, and I never walked in on him having any kind of sex in there for the entire semester. But she was on lithium.
For her.
That's one of my favorite parts is they show the, you know, big block letters on the bottle, lithium.
It's like,
and then when she's in her little chat room, she's in the early dial up goth chat room. And she's talking to a guy, and she's like, "What's your flavor?" And he goes, "Lithium." And she's like, "My kind of guy."
Oh my god!
What's lithium
doing
do?
Doing it recreationally or something?
What does it do?
It's like some kind of it's a heavy, like, antipsychotic or something.
Yeah,
it's a very heavy. I to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, you don't do it recreationally, but it seems like they are in this. I don't know.
When do we get into spoiler territory?
I'd like to do a little bit of a cast rundown because
this is
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, we mentioned Jared Leto. Who, as annoying as you may find him now, Kat, I mean, the guy is not aged. It's just
no, I don't
silly.
Get why he's... Because
he's a cult leader. That's why.
Why is he so annoying? I don't have a problem with Jared Leto.
Yeah,
I don't
me
really
either.
Get, me
either.
Why do people hate him so much?
He's like the annoying guy that you, like, went to school with that's, like, still just trying to show you how cool he is.
Right.
Like, all right. the, like, back... Like, all the behind-the-scenes shit for that stupid Suicide Squad movie or whatever, he's like sending the castmates like dead pigs and shit. He's like, "Oh, I'm the Joker." Yeah, we get it, bud. And he was doing it on this one too. Like, I was watching interviews where they were like, "Yeah, he would like come up behind me and like scream and scare me." And I'm like, even at age, I don't know, how old was he in this one? Probably like 40 already. He was fucking like still being a turd. I don't know.
Wait, scaring people like on a set of a horror movie, like coming up and scaring yeah. people? I mean,
shut
it doesn't
up, Dave.
Sound so fucking
I met Jared Leto.
How was
I
it?
Too.
He was super nice.
Like, okay, ridiculous. Well,
and
invite
was,
him onto
was
the
literally,
podcast.
I was at the Warped Tour. 30 Seconds to Mars. We're about to go on. I was standing next to the stage. Somebody was standing next to me. Like, well, I can't remember what band we were watching. And then I realized, oh, it's Jared Leto. And super nice. Literally talked to him for a couple of minutes. And then he was like, "I got to go play." Like, walked up on stage, did his thing.
We played a music festival in Texas, Paranoid, I think before you.
Yeah.
30 Seconds to Mars and Pantera and Paranoid shared a dressing room.
Oh,
and we
wow.
all played at this thing. And
no way.
Yeah, we all drank like the same keg of beer.
Wow. Did you guys kiss?
30 Seconds to Mars, Pantera, and Paranoid Social Club. Mm.
Well, it was a music festival. That was.
Yeah,
just
I remember.
Those three were in that dressing room, but there was a whole bunch of dressing room little blocks. Like little.
Right, right.
I will say, too, that Nick always likes to tell me this story of when he saw 30 Seconds to Mars at Warped Tour or something, and he was just like, "I just Jared Leto, he's such a douche. I was like, why? And he's like, he was just like throwing flowers into the crowd from the stage, being like,
that sounds nice.
This is a.
Would you let me finish?
Get this out of my courtroom.
He's so self-aware. He's so self. Can I just please? Can I please? He's so like fucking up his own butt and self-aware. He's just like, what kind of a band would throw flowers into the crowd at Warped Tour? Like, he said that, and he's just fucking like jerking himself off. Anyway, okay, cut it. I don't care.
Still don't.
So Cass,
yes,
Rebecca Gayheart, Noxzema girl. I think this is the first time she stepped out of Noxzema world.
I think you're right.
Had an acting role, pretty good. Joshua Jackson. You say Dawson's Creek, I say Fringe. We can fight about that later. Michael Rosenbaum. I know him as Lex Luthor from Smallville. Absolute stud. England, Richings, Tara Reid. We haven't even brought up Tara Reid.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even recognize her.
Loretta Devine, probably my favorite character. Also the only one that carries through into the sequel, Urban Legends Final Cut. She plays Reese, the security guard. Love the character. But yeah, this is stacked cast.
Hold on. Hey, what's up, JL? It's Dave. Yeah, maybe the podcast isn't going to be a good idea after all. Yeah. All right. Bye.
Good bit. That was really good.
This movie does the classic library thing. You simply go to the library and check out a book called The Encyclopedia of Urban Legends. there you go.
That doesn't exist?
It does now, actually.
I looked into it.
2001, somebody grabbed that title and published a book called The Encyclopedia of Urban Legends, but it just reminded me of always going to the library. They always have a bunch of books on werewolves and stuff. It's always the solution's always there.
So what about Pop Rocks and soda? Was that a big one for you guys?
I heard it, but I knew it wasn't true. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were never at like parties and stuff and like be like, oh, he's going to try it. Everyone gather around. This will be the time. It got Mikey.
I realized that there are things in this that were urban legend that I didn't notice like that. Now that you mentioned it, it's like, oh, I get that's part of the whole thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of them in there that aren't necessarily the focus, but they're subtler. They mentioned the spider eggs and the candy or something like that.
Sperm.
You know, if we want to make some sequels to this, what we could do is just watch, what was it, Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction, with the guy from Star Trek, The Next Generation, right? Did you guys ever watch that show? Where he's just like, they tell a story and then
you have to guess whether it was true or false.
Yeah. Wrong. That's not true. It's like a whole.
I just know him from the memes.
Yeah,
it's the super cuts.
But it was
super.
It's real. You can watch those.
Yeah. Spoiler time.
Okay, if you haven't seen Urban Legend or you don't remember who the killer is, I want to turn off the podcast now. We are going to be spoiling the big reveal at the end of Urban Legend now. Spoiler time. I just want to know, did anyone know the twist? Did anybody guess the killer?
No.
Not the first time I saw it. Definitely not the second time I watched it. This time, I still was like doubting myself until they got to the location of the final sequence. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
That's how you know. No, I did not guess it.
I had no clue. And it's so perfect that it's Rebecca Gayheart. Because you write her off as the dumbest college student who ever lived. The Pop Rocks, I thought, set the whole tone. The movie starts, she's on a stage in the classroom with Professor England talking about urban legends. She's got a mouthful of Pop Rocks and her bugging eyes. She's going, they explode in your mouth, like that. And you're like, all right, you don't think about her really again. She's in the story, of course, but she's like a non-factor at that. From that point on. And then I was like, whoa, it's so funny because I was going through my mind toward the end of the movie. I'm going, who could it be? Who could it be? Who could it be? It can't be Jared Leto. Too obvious. Maybe he's in on it, like you said, Kevin. But I was thinking, we've killed everyone. We're run out of characters. Like, that guy's dead. That guy's dead. Even Julian Richings is dead by that point. I was like, I don't know who's left for it to be. Bam. Boom. And then she does this crazy, like, Glenn Close Fatal Attraction thing, you know, her makeup's a little different, the lighting, the hair is getting wild. She was awesome.
Yeah, I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah.
I sympathized with her. I was like, well, you know what? If you could make a movie about, you know, someone who just got revenge. We've watched so many revenge movies and cheered for the
Yeah.
The person getting the revenge. This is very excessive. But I didn't, I was kind of like, when she was talking about why she was killing her, I was like, kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah, playing jokes, you know, jokes on you.
Yeah.
I will say the only inconsistency that I will question with her being the killer, did she have superhuman strength to overpower people that were like twice her size to murder
crazy
them?
Gives you, crazy gives you strength.
All right, I'm just saying.
I mean, look at all the Scream movies. It's like some like little girl throwing everyone around.
I'm glad you mentioned machine gun. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Dave, because you made some comments the other week. You say the original Scream movie, the first one, just that one. You don't like that. You don't like the original Scream.
I was initially put off by just the whole meta vibe. I didn't like that part of it. I thought it made it cheap and stupid. And then just it got really out of control. Like I said, I like what it did for horror, and it spawned all this stuff, and it made a whole bunch of money for people to make more movies. But yeah, I'm just kind of tired of it at this point, and I'm just annoyed every time I have to talk about it.
Well, I am. I'm with you there. This was a $14 million budget, made $70 million. This was a hit.
Yeah.
I just think they didn't have, and I didn't see the second one. You watched the second one, Kevin?
I watched all three.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
What would you think of the second one?
Just like diminishing quality. So the second one, it's passable. It's roughly the same quality of this in terms of just like, okay, I'm watching a movie that was well made. And the second one also has like a young and up-and-coming cast, so like a lot of people that you would recognize now, like Eva Mendes, like young Eva Mendes, I think in one of her first roles. But just not as good. And one of the things that Kat pointed out, like about this, that I really appreciate is how every kill is very different. It's very specific. Yeah. The second one starts to get away from that a little bit. And they put like the killer in like a fencing suit, which is super dumb. And then the third one is awful. I mean, it looks like we filmed it like on our iPhone. It's really, really bad. And it's called Bloody Mary. So I was excited to be like, okay, cool. They're going to start with Bloody Mary. They're going to do it in the mirror. We're going to have like a Candyman type thing, but set in some mid-aughts like slasher. Not at all. They deviate way away from like the urban legend stuff.
I loved the killer's outfit in this. They don't try to do
the parka.
Yeah, I love the parka. They don't try to do a mask. They just do the winter parka, the furry hood, and it's just kind of black so you can't see. I thought that was cool and scary.
I could have done with just like a ski mask. Does anyone ever do that? I mean, besides a cat burglar, but do the like slashers? Do you know of any slashers with a ski mask?
I think they're out there.
And I'm sorry, Josh Jackson and Rebecca Gayhart are both in Scream 2. They're film students in that class.
Next week, it's my undead week. Talking about from 1985, we're going to check out Return of the Living Dead.
Wow. What?
And from almost 10 years later, 1994, we're going to check out Cemetery Man, a.k.a. De la Morte, De la More.
Woo!